remembered. Impermanence of this body. Furthermore, death may come at any time, and I will lose this excellent opportunity. Therefore, abandoning action done solely for this life, I shall strive day and night on this path, and so make this life meaningful. All conditioned things are impermanent. When one sees this with insight, one becomes weary of suffering. This is the way to purity. The Buddha's vision was to see into the heart of life and to see that change is at the heart of everything. All conditioned things are impermanent. Everything is in a state of flux, of flow, arising in dependence on conditions and ceasing when those conditions cease. As far as I know, the Buddha's vision is unique in the history of human beings. I don't know anybody else who has, you know, really penetrated into the heart of how things are and given expression to it. So we're incredibly fortunate, as we heard yesterday, to be in contact with the Buddha's vision, which is the truth. I mean, it's the truth, it's the way things are. And it is absolutely crucial that we understand this deeply. The Buddha's last words to his disciples were, "Vaya Dharma Sankara Appamardena Sampadeta." Impermanent are all conditioned things. With mindfulness, strive on. Impermanent are all conditioned things. With mindfulness, strive on. These are the last words of an enlightened being to his disciples. So they are very, very important. They contain the essence, or, you know, that is what is most important. To see the truth of impermanence, to see the truth of conditionality. Another great teacher gives a similar exhortation to his disciple. Padmasambhava was about to leave Tibet, having completed his work setting up conditions for the Dharma to flourish. So he's about to go. He's not going to come back. And Queen Nangcheng, who is one of his disciples, asks him for a teaching of great import, because she knows she's not going to see her teacher ever again. So she says to him, "Please give me a teaching of great import, an effective verse that I can memorize and will lead me to the truth." So what does Padmasambhava say at this crucial juncture in his last meeting with Queen Nangcheng? "Listen, Queen Nangcheng, pay urgent attention to impermanence. Turn your mind to going for refuge and direct your prayers to the lamas. These are the preliminaries without which no means exists." So these two very great beings, the Buddha and Padmasambhava, at such crucial times in their last days, last hours with their disciples, are urging them to pay urgent attention to impermanence. So this is a very, very strong message for us. It's rolling down the centuries, and we really need to take it on and take it to heart. We really need to be finding ways to pay urgent attention to impermanence. What does it mean for us to attend closely to the transient nature of things? So intellectually, cognitively, we know the facts of impermanence. We all agree that flowers wither and die, that the weather changes. Our loved ones will die, so will we. We know this intellectually, but emotionally, we believe the opposite. We believe that despite all the evidence, somehow I believe I'll live forever and things will last. I see the world as permanent, pleasant enough, and ignore impermanence. At the start of this retreat, we did we were outside noticing things in the landscape, and it was really interesting. I found myself surrounded by this flow. The trees were moving, the clouds were moving, the light was changing. Everything around me felt like it was in flux. And here was I, fixed, solid, unchanging. It's like somehow it didn't apply to me. But this, yes, I can see it all there. Yes, I can agree. And yes, there's this psychophysical organism, which I choose to see as being very solid and fixed and permanent. So, that's in a way kind of what we're up against. And this morning, I can't believe this morning, I came out of the shrine room and it's brilliant blue sky, and I thought, oh, how wonderful. Hopefully we're going to have a really nice morning, and people will be able to go outside should they want to. And I just fixed it as this bright sunny morning, because this bit of the universe I could see at that moment had a brilliant blue sky. 10 minutes later, it was raining. And I thought, I've been here for, however long it is. And the one thing that has been very obvious is the fact that the weather is changeable. How could I have fallen into this error of just thinking, fixing that moment and thinking, okay, we've got a brilliant sunny morning. So we see the world, we are seeing the world in terms of the four viparyasas and not in terms of the three lakshanas. We're seeing conditioned existence as pleasant, permanent, substantial and beautiful, whereas in fact it is impermanent, unsatisfactory and insubstantial. And we make this fundamental error not because there's something the matter with us, but because our attitudes, our way of seeing the world, is just deeply rooted in spiritual ignorance. It's rooted, the way we relate to the world is rooted in delusion. And we're hardwired to see things in terms of a subject and an object. And from that initial error of subject and object, we fix the world and then we view it in terms of the viparyasas, and we see it as pleasant, permanent and substantial. So yes, I can see the sort of flow of conditions, but actually I'm relating to that from a sort of fixed subject, seeing an object. Yes, and I think in our society, here in Western Europe at this moment in time, we're very shielded from the realization of impermanence. Our lives have moved further and further away from contact with the land, from contact with the natural cycle of the seasons and of nature. And as a society, we're just out of connection with the truth of change. Many people, I think, in our society are disconnected and alienated. And my personal view is that technology doesn't help with this. We're not supported, in a sense, by the society we live in seeing the change and feeling the change. And that's a sort of huge change, I think, from 100 or 150 years ago. So death, may come at any time and I will lose this excellent opportunity. We do not know what is around the corner, what's going to happen tomorrow, next week, next year. The only certain thing in our lives is that we shall die. We have to wake up to this fact. We have to feel that sense of impermanence, that sense that our lives are transitory, to feel it in our hearts and know it in our bones. We have to know the fullness of life in its arising and in its dissolution. See the joy, feel the pain, feel that exquisite pain at the heart of life. There is both the tenderest love and great beauty and pain, suffering, cruelty, hatred. You know, this is the human condition. And what we need to do is be able to meet it all with openness and see it all, with not just focusing on one little bit. So I'm just going to share with you the recent months of my life, which have had a very particular, been very particular. So last year, particularly from the sort of summer onwards, there was a lot of change in every area of my life. My work was physically moving. My son was emigrating to Canada. In the Sangha, my chapter, all the members meeting chapters, that's just weekly, it's a very sort of important part of my life. That changed. I'm not making a value judgment about them, I'm just saying it was just an awful lot of change in just about every aspect of my life. I think the only thing that wasn't really changing was the place I live in. So there were sort of shifting sands, it felt, wherever I looked. And then the autumn contained several deaths which had an impact on me. So the first one was that a very order member who I really appreciated was on her way to see her granddaughter, and she died a few hours after being hit by a car. And then towards the end of November, there was a week in which my brother-in-law died, and he was a year younger than I was. That was on the Tuesday. On the Saturday, two older sisters died. One is a very good friend of mine, who I was hoping to be seeing more of in the coming years, Vajragita, and the other person who I didn't know well, but was a very tragic story in that she'd come to this country from New Zealand for celebration of Te Ratanaloka, and she got an infection and was dead within 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something. And also in that week, a colleague who I really is a lovely woman, had her first baby, and within 48 hours the baby got meningitis. So I was reeling and dazed by this, and I'm not, you know, this isn't unique. I know a lot of you have actually had a lot of encounter, you know, faced up to death in the last year, but you know, it's death is part of life. That's the whole point of the Buddha's teaching to Kisa Gotami. That, you know, we are all facing death, the death of people who we love, our own death. So, I was days done in shop. And I think what was particular, it's not just, you know, that this all happened in such a short space of time, but two of the people, Phil was a year younger than me, Narvachitta was the same age as me. Obviously Tara's baby, who's now well, actually, fine, as far as we know, he recovered. Was a total. They were all sort of, they're kind of unlooked for. I'm facing a future which was unlooked for. You know, I was hoping to be seeing Vajragita very regularly in the next coming years, and now she's not here. And I'd seen her in April, and she was really well and her usual self. So that we're faced with a future. I'm facing a future that wasn't sort of meant to be somehow, and I think that's something in that about part of the understanding impermanence. We fix our futures, you know, and actually we that's a very grave error. So the question that arose for me was, how do I live with this? How do I live with death? How do I stay open to the fullness of life and live with the fact of death without being overwhelmed, falling into horrified anxiety, falling into depression or despondency? How do I avoid beating myself up if I forget all about impermanence? You know, how do we as human beings meet the human condition? How do we take this on? And those may be questions you'd like to reflect on in the coming days. So shortly after this week in November, I think it was two weeks, I was on National Order Weekend at Adistana. So we very strongly had our dead sisters in mind on that weekend. It was very strong. And at the same time, the theme of that weekend was discipleship. And also the day after that Order Weekend was my brother-in-law's funeral, which was a remarkable event. It was contained both very great sadness and great joy. It was a really sort of... I haven't been at a sort of day like that. It was very, you know, both very, very celebratory and joyful and very, very sad. Something about that juxtaposition of on the Order Weekend that, you know, was helpful in thinking about, so how do I live with death? And I mean, one of the answers is to live as meaningful a life as possible. So, abandoning actions done solely for this life, I shall strive day and night on this path and so make this life meaningful. So it's about making my values central and honouring them. The demands of samsara are endless. It's very, very easy to fill our times. And I think it's our time. I think it's Gampopa, isn't it, who says that busyness is laziness. You know, there are always domestic chores. There's always washing up. There's always cleaning. There's always someone to see. There's always another book to read or a film to watch or Facebook to look at. You know, there's always stuff. It's just endless. We need to prioritize what is truly nourishing to us in our lives so that we can be as fully aligned with reality and the truth as possible. I was really struck in Ratnaguna's book. He gives that example, doesn't he, of saying to a friend, "No, I can't meet you. Because I'm," and the friend says, "Oh, but you said you were doing nothing." And said, "Of course you can meet me." And Ratnaguna said, "No, I am doing nothing. And I can't meet you then. You know, and what's, you know, so he was really prioritizing his values, what is meaningful rather than, and important rather than what sort of is demanding and somehow feels like it needs to be done. You know, we need to be doing that. I don't know about you, but I sometimes put lines through my diary, which means having that time for myself, for meditation, reflection, whatever it might be. And what happens is sometimes something else, I allow something else, I choose to allow something else to creep in. You know, we really need to honour what nourishes us and give ourselves the space and opportunity and time to do that. We need to make amends as soon as possible for anything that is unskillful or we feel regret about or have overlooked. The sixth of the Dhammapada. Others do not realize that we are all heading for death. Those who do realize it will compose their quarrels. And a further reflection was, you know, we need to make sure we aren't taking people for granted. I think it's very easy with people who we're close to just take them for granted and not let them know that they really are important to us. And again, you know, who knows what's going to happen? So we need to sort of cultivate that sort of sense of freshness and newness and make sure those who we care about know that that we care about them. So, yeah. So living a meaningful life. And then living fully the journey of my life. The only place our life is happening is right now. Anything else is fantasy or memory. We need to be inhabiting our days, inhabiting our moment. You know, if you're thinking about something that happened last week, well, that is a memory. If you're wondering about or creating a fantasy or playing how you're going to deal with something when you get off retreat, that is a fantasy. It's not happening. We need to be living our lives here and now. And that means we have to be living our life now in the way that we want, and making sure it is meaningful and it is enjoyable and so on. My sister and brother-in-law had a joint project restoring their Victorian North London terrace, which is very beautiful, and they're both very creative and artistic. So it's a wonderful, wonderful place to visit. You know, if they hadn't been enjoying that process together and had been sort of solely focused on we've got to get this house finished and then we'll be able to live our lives and enjoy it, etc., that future isn't happening, you know. So we have to, whatever our journey is, whatever we're doing, whatever we've chosen to do, we have to be, you know, living life. Living that as fully as we can, because we don't know what's going to happen. And we can't afford to just think, well, when I retire, I'll be able to meditate every day, or when I'm less busy, I'll do some reflection, or Well, you know, we do it all the time, don't we? Whatever it is, we just need to be doing whatever that is now, finding a way to do that now, if it's important enough to us, because that day may never come. Yes, there's a poem which I'm not going to read, but I'll leave it out because it's quite long, called Ithaca by the Greek poet Kafafi. But three lines. Keep Ithaca always in mind. Arriving there is what you are destined for, but do not hurry the journey at all. So, you know, keep your going for refuge always in mind. If you've asked for ordination, keep your ordination always in mind, but do not hurry the journey. You know, live the journey. Yeah, so we need to be living our journey now, living it now. Buddhang jivita pariyantang saranga chami. Dharmang jivita pariyantang saranga chami. Sanghang jivita pariyantang saranga chami. All my life I go for refuge to the Buddha. All my life I go for refuge to the Dharma. All my life I go for refuge to the Sangha. And the refrain of the Tiratnavandana goes on to say, no other refuge than the wake, no other refuge than the Buddha. Refuge supreme is there for me. So this is the supreme refuge, the only refuge, and we've got no other. Oh, by the virtue of this truth, may grace abound and victory. So no other refuge than the Dharma. Refuge supreme is there for me. Oh, by the virtue of this truth, may grace abound and victory. So, you know, we have the refuges. We're all here. We're all mitras. You know, we've got the three jewels in our lives. We need to be going for refuge as fully and completely as we can. And then finally, my final answer to this question of sort of how to live with the fact of death and impermanence. Well, we have to find ways to keep in mind the fact of impermanence. It's very hard to keep death in mind. There's a whole mystery, isn't it? I mean, death itself is very mysterious, and I think the veils are torn apart, but then they close. I think that's probably what happens. You know, I don't feel the same sense of urgency and shock and disbelief and so on as I felt a few weeks ago. You know, life was very strong. You know, life reasserts itself. So, you know, I think part of our task is to find ways to contemplate impermanence and keep a sense of urgency. And that, how you do that, is going to be very different for different people. And it's not a practice. It shouldn't be something that's causing us to feel depressed or despondent. It's about sort of cultivating that, partly sort of chipping away at trying to see the truth of things, but also just, you know, a way maintaining our momentum. So I know there are some people who recall the fact that they will die every day. You can ask yourself at the end of the day, have I lived my day according to my highest values? I think cultivating a sense of gratitude is a way of living, developing a sense of impermanence, because we're looking at sort of conditions that give rise to our lives or our actions. So cultivating gratitude, recollecting the lives of the Buddhas and the Buddhist teachers. Poetry, again, can be a way of connecting with impermanence. So I think, those are just some of my thoughts. I mean, it's a question of, you know, you exploring this and finding out how that works for you in your life. But we need to find ways to stay open to impermanence so that we can accept the flow of life with its joy and pain without getting stuck in resistance or fear, but just be able to respond creatively with an open, aware, loving, tender heart to whatever is happening now. So I'm just going to conclude with the final verse of the root verses of the six bardos. O procrastinating one, who thinks not of the coming of death, devoting yourself to the useless doings of this life, improvident are you in dissipating your great opportunity. Mistaken indeed will your purpose be now if you return empty-handed from this life. Since the holy Dharma is known to be your true need, will you not devote yourself to the holy Dharma even now? Thus say the Mahasiddhis in devotion, if the chosen teaching of the Guru be not borne in mind, will you not be acting even as a traitor to yourself?